right. Join me in welcoming. They're both going to kind of present separately but together. That makes sense. But join me in welcoming Holly Muehlheisen and Hannah Johnson.
All right, let me get myself together here. I want to say that this service is going to be a wonderful service. And do you know how I know that? We had a time getting our PowerPoint to work. And when you face roadblocks like these, you gotta look around and see what God's about to do, because that means God's got something big in store. And this is gonna be our seventh different attempt to try and get this PowerPoint on the screen, and it's working. Praise Jesus. I would like to introduce myself for those of you who have not met me yet, although I know several of you have. My name is Holly Muehlheisen, and I have been serving with World Gospel Mission in Japan for the past 14 years. In fact, I came to this camp before I went to Japan the first time. So y'all have been with me since before I even landed in Japan, before I knew any Japanese, and just had a love for the people. I did want to share this picture. I'm the little dark-headed girl, and that's my little sister, but this was our family's very first prayer card picture. These things are still around in some churches, I'm sure. Prayer card pictures last forever. But that little family left and went with World Gospel Mission to another country, and that country was not Japan. It was the country of Kenya. We went to East Africa, and we spent a long time there. I lived there from the time that I was 4 years old until I was 17, about to go into my last year of high school. I loved Kenya. People always ask my parents, "Aren't you upset that you have to raise your children in Africa?" And my parents' response is always, "No, we got to do it. It was amazing." Kenya was a huge part and is a huge part of who I am. It was in Kenya where I first, as a little girl, accepted Christ into my heart. It was the Kenyan church, Africa Gospel Church, Good Shepherd Africa Gospel Church specifically, where I learned how to worship, where I learned how to start getting involved in the church, beginning to serve in the church. That's where I was baptized into the church. The Kenyans taught me what it looked like to be a believer, to be a Christian. That's also where I went to school. That's where I had my friends, at school and at church, and I was happy. And then the Lord did something terrible to our family. He asked us to move to Marion, Indiana. And to those of you who heard Miss Winnie, our family has said very often, you don't live in Marion, Indiana, unless you are called to live in Marion, Indiana. And they were called to work at Mission Headquarters. And when my father first got the call from Tom Hermes, who was president at the time, and he got off the phone, he went to my mother and told her what had happened. And she said, "You didn't say yes, did you?" And he said, "No, I said no." But he asked me to pray about it, and I could not tell the president of the mission that I was not willing to pray about something. And so they prayed, and though it was a very difficult decision for my family, they felt like it was God's leading. Even though their hearts were in Africa, God was leading them to Marion, and it was a rough transition for our family. Again, like Miss Winnie shared, it was very much what she said in the 11 o'clock service, and if you missed it, go back and watch it online, because she had some good words. Our family was not happy to be back. Our hearts were in Africa. I was not angry with my parents, because I knew my parents were also struggling with it. But they were following God. They were obeying him and what he was asking them to do. It wasn't about their preferences. And so I wasn't angry with them. I was a believer. I was baptized. I had been serving in the church, even as a kid. I knew. And the really funny thing was, I wasn't angry at God. I could have been. Get pulled out of the school you've been in since first grade. Get pulled away from your friends. Get pulled away from your church. They dumped me in the middle of the cornfields of Indiana. And I had grown up in Nairobi, which is a big city. It's noisy and dirty and loud and dirty and loud and full of life. And the church there was alive. We had worship like we've been having, where they sang for 45 minutes before my dad got up to preach. I came back to the States and we sang a song, and then we had announcements, and then we sang another song, and then we had the offering, and then we sang another song, and then the sermon, and then we were done. And I thought to myself, was that worship? I don't feel like I've been to church yet. It seemed kind of dead in the place. I had a hard time. And yet God began to speak with me during that year of transition as I was getting ready to finish off high school. God began to open my eyes to not only was he at work in Kenya, but he was at work around the world. I got to hear other missionaries share their presentations. I got to hear other missionary kids share about what God was doing in the country they grew up in Papua New Guinea, in Bolivia, in Honduras, in Japan. Oh, this God's bigger than I thought he was. He's not just the God of where I live. He's not just God in that church where I could see him at work. He's working here too. And I don't think I'd be a missionary today if God hadn't opened my heart up even then as a senior in high school and I began to see the bigger picture. When I went to college, I went to Asbury. This is probably for many of you a very familiar site of Hughes Auditorium. It was there that God began to deal with my heart about what I was going to do with my future. And like most high school kids and most college kids, you are seeking for what's coming next and what you're going to do with your life, and the adults around you will not let up. So what are you going to do? What's your major? And it's hard because you're like, I'm trying to figure out and I don't know. Why can you please give me a little bit of, you know, of a break? I'm trying to figure this out. I was a junior in college, and I had been praying and asking God to reveal to me what was coming next. But I was also praying that he would make me a missionary. And that sounds super spiritual, and it was super not. Because it was a selfish request that I had. It was about my preference. I had still a lot of confusion in my heart about living in the U.S. Y'all are weird, okay? Y'all do things that do not make sense. And Kenya was the better way to do things. Even though English is my mother tongue, I would come back here to the U.S. and people would be talking about TV shows and telling jokes or radio programs or hot top 50 songs or something like that, and I would not be able to follow. I missed a lot of cultural history that people of my generation carry, which people of your generation probably carry, but imagine coming in and not knowing a thing, and you're just constantly feeling like a fish out of water and like you don't belong. And I thought, if I could just get myself out of this country and into another country, serving God somewhere, that would be awesome. And God began to deal in my heart in the chapel. And it was nothing to do with who was speaking. It had everything to do with God speaking to my heart. And God began to ask me in a very gentle voice. He talks to me in a gentle voice. He's not harsh with me. He probably knows I need it. But he kept saying to me, very insistently but very gently, Holly, who is Lord of your life? Am I Lord? Or are you going to make all the decisions? Am I just going to be an accessory to your life? Who's going to be the one who rules over your life? And I kept telling the Lord, but Lord, I'm asking for good things. You know I love you. Why won't you ask me to be a missionary? This is a good thing. And he asked me, what about if I ask you to stay in America? I don't want to do that, Lord. For some of you, it might be the opposite prayer. The Lord's asking you to go somewhere, and you say, I want to stay right here. For me, it was, I don't want to stay right here. I want to go. But it was a selfish, comfort zone kind of prayer. It was about my preference. And I wrestled with the Lord, and it got to the point that I knew that if I was going to still be able to call myself a Christian, I had to yield. And I had to say, yes, Lord, you're Lord. If you want me to stay in America, I will do it. I will serve you wherever you put me, no matter what that means. And I was able to finally say that before chapel ended. All 40 minutes, I have no idea what that speaker even said. I remember who it was. It was the chairman of the Board of Trustees. Do not have a clue what his scripture was, because God and I were wrestling. But I didn't have a good idea, a good attitude about it still at the end. I was still saying in my heart, fine, God, I'll do what you say. I will stay here, but I still love missions and missionaries, and I'm still going to go on short-term teams, and I'm still going to be on the mission board of my church and, you know, trying to, you know, back out gracefully from this argument with the Lord, which doesn't usually work. If you've won an argument against the Lord, you've actually lost. If the Lord wins, you win too. And so I finally yielded to the Lord. And nobody was more surprised than I was. A year later, in the computer lab, as I was doing my part-time job, straightening up the keyboards and the mouses, dusting the backs of the monitors, because back in the day, this is before this picture, they had like the big monitors, showing my age a little, cleaning off the whiteboards, pushing all the chairs in. That was one of my jobs as a computer lab assistant. And I was praying before the fall revival services as a senior. And I had just told my dad, I'm going to go on to pharmacy school. I was planning my life in the U.S. I was being obedient. And God gave me an experience. The only way that I can really describe it is that I experienced his love. It was a feeling. It wasn't a voice. It wasn't a writing on the wall. It was a feeling of overwhelming, deep love. And it was not my love, but it was God's love for this world, especially for people who don't know him or maybe just know him by name, that Jesus person, that God who the Christians worship. And it was very much an Isaiah moment for me where I said, yes, Lord, I will go. Here I am, send me. But this time, that response was not about my preference. It was in response to the call of the Lord. The heart was so different between those 2 years. I had wanted to go before because I didn't like America. Now I was going because I loved those people who I hadn't even met, because God had just given me a glimpse, just a small taste of how much he loves them. I ended up serving in Japan. Hold on. There we go. No, there we don't go. There we go. Japan is a nation it's about the size of the state of California, but the city of Tokyo itself, where I have lived, has more people than the state of California. And so what we always tell people is, if you don't like people, don't go there, because you're gonna be with them. And I had the privilege of serving there for 14 years, learning the language, partnering with our national churches, which was a huge part of my calling, to come alongside the national church. And I got to travel across Japan. I got to go do special meetings. I got to go visit in different areas. And I was privileged to meet those people. A lot of what I did involved English ministry. It's one of the huge ways that you do outreach. Japan as a nation is pretty skeptical of Christianity. They are about 90% Buddhist, 90% Shinto, and they're so skeptical of Christianity because they don't know many Christians. And so they look at you with like, are you a cult? What do you guys believe anyway? You guys, that religion's for Westerners. That doesn't have any relevance for me. So they kind of look at you skeptically. And while you're free to enter the country as a missionary for religious reasons, the hearts aren't open. In fact, there is less than 1% Christian in Japan. I think the number I have on this slide here is 0.7, but it may have grown a little bit to 0.8. Depends on what numbers you're looking at, if you're including Orthodox, Catholics, and then some groups like the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses who are also there, or the Unification Church, which is also another whole story. But I like this image because it very visually and simply shows what it's like to be a Christian in Japan. Imagine if everybody that you knew around you at work was not a believer. Everybody around you in your neighborhood, nobody was a believer, and you were it. It can be very lonely, and it can be very hard to share your faith because you're worried about being rejected. They tend to be skeptical. Why do you even need that? Isn't that a crutch? Isn't that something the foreigners do? We're Japanese, we're Shinto, and we're Buddhist by tradition. This is what's good for us. And so there's very hard for that one to reach out. And so that's what I do, is I come alongside that one and help them to reach out to the winnable around them. And like I said, we do that through English ministry a lot of times. The past several years, I've been blessed. Oh, I went too far. I've been blessed to be a part of teaching English with a variety of different churches. One of the major reasons we do this is because it is so hard to enter a church as an unbeliever. Like, for myself, the thought of going into some other religion's worship center is hard. Like, am I even allowed to go in that building? Is that permissible? I don't believe in that, so am I allowed to go in and just look around? And so the Japanese have that same idea about the church in the U.S. and in Japan. I'm not a Christian, so is it even fair game for me to enter that building? What do they even do in there? What does worship look like? Like, I don't know the ropes. I don't know how to do these things. This is completely foreign to me. And so one of the things that I do is the English ministry, which helps make the church an easier location to enter. It's an easier invite for a Christian to say, would you come to my church for an English class, than it is to say, would you come to my church for Sunday worship? Think about it yourself. It's a lot easier to ask somebody to come to a Boy Scout meeting at your church, or to a recovery group, or something along those lines, or a fundraiser, than it is to say, would you come with me to a Bible study? You don't know how they're going to react. They might reject you. They might look at you with different eyes after you invite them. And so one of the best images that I have found to explain what I do is this one that's on the screen right now. When you go into a Shinto shrine or to a Buddhist temple, they have a gate that you enter. And that gate is the boundary between the secular world and what the holy place. You're stepping onto holy ground is the idea. This is sacred. But part of the tradition is you don't step on that threshold, that big wooden thing. That's the threshold. You have to step over it. And there's a phrase in Japanese that talks about lowering the threshold. And that phrase means to make it easier for someone to enter. And so my ministry is all about lowering the threshold. I was at a temple with one of my friends. We were going to see the cherry blossoms there. And these two girls walked up to get pictures in the temple with their beautiful kimono on. And they walked up to that threshold, and they stood for about a minute or two debating how they were going to get over that threshold in that picture, because it was up to their knees, and the kimono is a very slim-fitting dress, and it was hard to get over. It was almost easier for them to either turn around and leave or to skip the gate entirely and go around a different way. They managed to get over, but we don't want the church to be anything like that. We want the church to be welcoming. We want the church to be friendly, personable. We want them to build a relationship with the people in the church, and the church to be able to reach out across that threshold and reach out and say, you're welcome here. We love you. And you know what? Jesus loves you. And so that's what I have gotten to do for many years in Japan, and I have been so blessed. Right after I went back in 2019, I went back in the fall of 2019 after I had been at camp that year, and the world kind of shut down the next year, and we had to get creative. I do not just a lot of English teaching. I do a lot of English teaching to children. And so we went to Zoom without a pause. I had about 6 churches lined up to teach kids English to. Fun, fun English is what we called it, because we were fun, fun people. But we had to go down to one church because everybody else was just scrambling to keep their head above water because we were not meeting in person in churches at that time. We were being so very careful. Again, the church did not want to ruin their reputation in the neighborhoods, in the communities where they ministered. They wanted to be above reproach by any means. They bent over backwards. But we went to Zoom. And from 6 churches, I went down to one that grew to 6 churches, 4 more churches that started joining us online. And those 4 churches, only one was in Tokyo with me. The others were Two of the others were on different islands in Japan. They would never have been able to come to my class where I was teaching in person. And I'm so very grateful that I got the opportunity to minister in that way, although it was a very steep learning curve, and that I got to minister with pastors like these who are willing to lower the threshold and be silly with kids. Let them know they love them. Let them know that they are welcome. Lower that threshold. As you can see from the picture, they have a good sense of humor. And they are not worried about not seeming serious enough. They like to have a good time. I also got to join with another church as things began to open up and start their children's church outreach this past term. Their children had slowly, as they hit junior high, they stopped coming to church. Their school gets them too busy to even show up. They have things all day Sunday morning. I mean, I used to walk into the train station to go to church at 7:30 in the morning, and the kids going to school in uniform would be flooding out the opposite direction. You guys have it good, you just don't know it. But this church, their kids had all grown up and out of the children's church, and it's really hard to get Sunday school growing again when you don't have any kids. You got to have kids to get kids. And so they asked me to come and help relaunch a Sunday school program, start having special events, again, facilitating a local believers and a local church into reaching out into their community. A lot of what I've done in Japan has not been about me building relationships with the Japanese, although I have. A lot of what I have done in Japan over the years has been providing a place for believers and pastors and their community members, their family members, their friends, their coworkers, to start brushing shoulders and building relationships. Those relationships lead to trust. Those relationships lead to, hey, these church people aren't so weird after all. They're normal people like me. They care about the same things I care about. And they care about me, and they care about my family. I have been so very blessed to be a part of this the past several years. I'm going to share a short video because I am going to be going into some transition. And I wanted to show this as kind of a summary of my time in Japan and to say thank you as I begin to change some things. Thank you. There's a lot of memories in those pictures. But this spring, as I was praying about what was coming next, starting to beginning to plan for my next term, going through some things this past couple years has been hard. God told me in a very gentle voice, again, that gentle voice, you're not going back to Japan next term. And that's hard for me because I do love those people so much. And I have been privileged to work with the cream of the crop of the church and of the believers in Japan. But the Lord gave me a very beautiful image that has been so encouraging to me, and I'd like to share it with you. And that image is of a grafted tree. I have spent about a third of my life in Kenya growing up. The Kenyan church raised me and taught me what it was to live like a Christian, taught me how it was to actually grow up and be an adult. I was 17 when I left. Spent about a third of my life here in the U.S., and then I've spent about a third of my life in Japan. And Japan taught me what it was to be a missionary. And this image came to me of a tree with several big limbs that had been grafted in. And it was my heart. And one of those big limbs was Kenya. And it's still flowering in my heart. It's still a huge part of who I am today, is the time that I spent in Kenya, the way that the Lord taught me there, the way that the church there in Kenya impacted me, influenced me. But another big limb is that church in Japan and the ministry in Japan, and it's in my heart and it's still flowering. Even though I'm going somewhere else, God has grafted those into me, into who I am. And he's getting ready to graft again. And grafting is a very deliberate action. You don't just happen. It doesn't just happen in nature where two trees just start growing together and becoming one tree. But the Lord's doing it. And it's a little bit painful as it's beginning, but I'm trusting that whatever country the Lord places in my future, it's going to be grafted in well and it's going to live and grow well in my heart. But as I was still thinking about that grafting image, I was looking for some kind of picture that would express that feeling. I tried ChatGPT to see if they could come up with something, and it looked weird. And so I started looking for just a Google search for a tree with lots of grafts. And this is actually a digital picture of an experiment that they are doing. It's called the fruit salad tree, or the tree of many fruit. The scientist has grafted a tree with 40 different fruit. He's got all kinds of branches that he's putting in, and in about 10 years, they estimate that this is what it will look like if every graft takes. And as I saw that, my vision expanded a little bit more. Not only was God putting those grafts into my own heart, I carry Kenya with me. I carry my American culture and heritage with me. I carry Japan with me. But you know what? Part of me has been grafted into the church in Japan. Even though I've left, there's still a legacy there that will continue to bear fruit. And it's a small part of that tree. It's not a big limb like Japan is in my heart. But I want to encourage you. Many of you probably have gone through some transitions like I have, where you have lost a job or God has called you. I think Allison was testimony last night. She thought she knew what she was doing. God gave her a job, and then he pulled her out to come to the Oaks. Is that right? I was resonating with that testimony last night. I'm like, oh my goodness. God is putting this together, that's for sure. Maybe God has taken you out of your school. You've gone on to something different. But my prayer and hope for all of you is that whatever has gone on in the past is still growing in your hearts, is still bearing fruit in your hearts. And what you have left behind, the ministry, the things that you have served and done in the past for different churches, different communities that you've been a part of, that it would be fruit that's coming from those, that time and the ministry that you did, that it was not in vain. I want to encourage you with that. This has been such an encouragement to me, and I want it to be for you as well. Hannah next.
Well, I want to start by asking you a question. What would change in your community if your church was no longer there? I'm going to say it another way. If your church closed down tomorrow, what would change in the neighborhood around your church? Or what would happen if your pastor quit tomorrow? What would look different in your church? Would anything change? My name's Hannah Johnson, as you have probably heard several times already, and I am serving in Paraguay, which is the red country on the map of South America. They're kind of in the middle. And before I get into what I do and what the Lord has been doing, I have really been encouraged by a set of scripture. And I loved seeing on Holly's video where it says, "I have been privileged to be your missionary." I was reminded this last Sunday that the way that I get to serve the church is to be the hands and feet of Jesus in another place. But the Lord doesn't just call hands and feet. He calls each part of the body. So, parts of 1 Corinthians 12, I'm not going to read the entirety of it, but it says, "Just as a body, though one, has many parts, but all its many parts form one body, so it is with Christ. But in fact, God has placed the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be." Maybe. "Now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it." Each of us gets to play a role in missions. And again, I am so thankful that I get to be the hands and feet. But hands and feet don't move without other parts of the body. If you tried to run using only your feet, you would look ridiculous. And I would try it for you, but I'm not going to look ridiculous up here. So, the way that the Lord called me was step by step, and I am so thankful for God who knows our hearts and knows our personalities. And so the Lord knew that if he asked me to go ahead and hop on a plane and head to Paraguay, I would have told him he was crazy. And so as I look back over my life, there were little things that he continued to ask me to do one part at a time. Some of those things happened in a youth camp. Where I felt like the Lord was asking me to do ministry full time. And I didn't know what that looked like, and I was scared. And another part was when I got to college. Similarly to Holly, was sitting in a service that was not about missions. I couldn't tell you what the preacher was talking about, but I was sitting there with God, and he's like, "You're called into missions." And I was like, "I really don't think I am, though, God." And he's like, "Yeah, you are." I was like, "Well, what does that even mean?" So by the end of it, I'm so nervous and anxious, I pulled my college pastor to the side, and she goes, "What's going on, Hannah?" And I said, "I think I'm called into missions, and I am so scared." And we prayed together, and she's been one of the people who has encouraged me and supported me along the way. And so the next part, the next step that the Lord had called me to was a program called the Heart Village. And it's a simulated village that trains missionaries for the physical conditions that are often the reason why missionaries are leaving the field. And so just a few examples, we lived in plywood cabins without electricity while we were there. We also learned how to hand wash clothes and cook over a fire. During a portion of the time that I was there, we weren't allowed to leave the campus. We had to learn how to live just as a community. And so the Lord really changed my heart. And even during that time, I said, "I'm not going to be a missionary. I'm just here because God has asked me to be in this place." And out of the 13 of us who were there that semester, I'm currently the only one serving full-time overseas. And so, first of all, I want to encourage you that your yes to the Lord is more important than anything else. And it was that string of yeses that led me to a midterm, a six-week experience in Bolivia. And I couldn't get away from God talking about what your next steps were in life or the plan that he had, the purpose he had for your life. I went to a different church every week with the missionaries, and the same theme kept popping up over and over and over. And by the end of the trip, I was like, "Okay, God, I get it. I understand." And I started filling out my application, and that was what had led me to become a full-time missionary. But my plan changed yet again as I was applying. And as I began raising support, the Lord had another plan. My regional director called me and said, "Hey, Hannah, I want to talk to you about the situation in Bolivia." I had planned on returning there, and I was like, "Oh, okay," thinking that maybe something political had happened or my timing was going to change or who knew what. But when he called, he goes, "The missionaries there are sensing that it's time for them to leave the field. And so you would be the only one going to Bolivia. If you'd like to still go, you can. However, we think it'd be best if you go to Paraguay instead. And I began sobbing on the phone, and I can't even begin to express the way that the Lord had prepared me in that moment to know that that was his plan. And so this is a drawing from one of my students. As I shared my calling with them, they were taking their notes during chapel, and this was the picture that they drew of Miss Johnson going from the U.S. to Bolivia and then to Paraguay. During the first 2.5 years that I've been overseas, I was serving at a school called the Asuncion Christian Academy. It's a school of about 200 students. We have Paraguayans, Korean students. We have missionary kids from the U.S. There's some German students, some students from Taiwan. It's really a melting pot of cultures, and the students have such a great opportunity to learn about the world. And while I was there, I got to be a part of a really amazing community of teachers who prayed for their students and who viewed their job as their ministry. And I also got to learn a lot about Paraguayan culture. Every time that we were off for school, I would ask my Spanish teacher, what's this holiday that's coming up? Why are we celebrating? Why don't I have to go to work? And so there was a lot that I learned about Paraguay, and I learned how to love the country well. I also got the opportunity to love on some pretty awesome 10-year-olds. I know that I have had a great impact on them, but they have also changed my life in ways that they don't understand. A lot of those are through life lessons that I got to teach them. And so you'll see the two ducks. This is one of my favorite lessons that I teach, and it's yay duck and yuck duck. They are two ducks, a pair of ducks, or paradox. We talk about how you can have emotions that are both happy and sad at the same time. You can have a yay emotion and a yuck emotion. And some days may be more yay, and some days may be more yuck. But there are days that can be both yay and yuck. And so there were days where my students would walk up to me as I was having a rough day, and they'd look at me and be like, Miss Johnson, today's a yuck duck day, isn't it? And I just laugh and smile, and I'm like, yes, yes, it is. And so they are like sponges just soaking everything in, but they were such a blessing to me. I'm also thankful that I was not the only one there in Paraguay. And so this is our team. This is a picture from our field retreat back in November. I serve alongside the Bowen family, who just arrived back in the States for home assignment. Gabe Ernst, who has been on the field just over a year now, and the Donahues, Mark and Susanna, they told me to send their greetings to you as I told them I was heading here this week. So if you know them, hello from them. And then not pictured is a couple new families that we have that are coming to the field. And so our field is experiencing a lot of transition right now, and we're really just praying and seeking where the Lord has us going in the future as we have new missionaries continuing to come. One of the areas that we know that the Lord is calling us to focus on is with our national churches. There are 8 congregations that we support. This is one of them. While we had a short-term team there, we took a whole church picture, including the short-term team. And this is a church that I attended for the first couple years that I was there in Paraguay. It's called Rios de Agua Viva, or Rivers of Living Water. And the joy that the churches have is just so contagious. The way that other cultures worship sometimes is just so different. And if I had to choose one word to describe the worship in Paraguay, it would be joy. There is always some kind of almost dance party happening in church every week, and it is just so contagious. But the reality is that only 7% of the country are evangelical or Protestant Christians, which means that 93% are Catholic or another religion. And so our job is not done at all in Paraguay as far as the church is concerned. The other area that we are starting to focus on more is with the First Nations or indigenous communities. These are communities in the rural areas of Paraguay. Some of them don't even have running water. We helped put in a water pump not that long ago. And so these are some pictures from, I think the one is from a kids camp, and then the other is from delivering some food and clothing to them. But when I heard this next stat that I shared, I was just astounded. I had already been living in Paraguay for 2.5 years and had never heard it, and it really just spoke to my heart. There are, out of the 776 indigenous communities, over 600 of them have never heard the name of Jesus. I'm just going to let that sink in for a minute. Of the 776, over 600 do not know the name of Jesus. How lucky we are to live in the U.S. where there's a church on every corner, where the name of Jesus is being shared. That is not the reality for many. And even with that statistic of 7%, it's likely that some of these communities have not been counted in that number because of how rural they are. And so our team has felt led in these two different directions, and we're really seeking the Lord with open hands to see, what does that look like? Does that look like us moving into one of these communities and serving them? Does it look like opening a base and serving several communities? Does it look like discipleship? Does it look like evangelism? Does it look like some combination of them? And even as I call every couple weeks to the field to see what is going on, the Lord is doing new things on the field. And there is just momentum and excitement as we continue to seek him. This picture is my all-time favorite picture of my 2.5 years in Paraguay. Every year the church has an event called Grand Celebration, where we get together to acknowledge the founding of the denomination, World Gospel Church. And so this year, our 8 churches gathered together, and there was this moment where they asked all of the pastors and missionaries to get up front together. And as I look at this crowd, I see people who have worked hard. As I shared this morning, there are pastors who are overwhelmed and whose ministries could be multiplied so much more if they had the resources that they needed. And I see people who love the Lord so much, who have said yes to him in so many different ways. And I am humbled to be a part of what God is doing in Paraguay. And so the Lord has asked me to step away from the school and focus in some of these new areas, specifically with our national church, and helping new missionaries get settled as they come down to the field. And so, just like Holly, we were talking and said, I don't think it's an accident that we both ended up here in this season of transition, holding our hands open and available for whatever the Lord has for us in this next season. We both carry some experience, some understanding of, for me, of Paraguay, for Holly, of different parts of the world. But the Lord is going to use us and use our open hands for his good and his ministry around the world. And so I want to invite you into that. These are the 4 main ways. As Wayne mentioned earlier, there is a clipboard over here with the display. There's also some prayer cards and other things that are over there, so you can sign up and write that down, or come find me later tonight or tomorrow, or I'll be here through the rest of camp, so we can definitely chat some more. Prayer is important. It is so, so, so important, because the Lord moves when we pray, as we have already seen this camp. Giving, again, Steve mentioned, but I have a large portion of my monthly recurring support that I need, and so it would be such a blessing if you would be willing to pray and see if that's a way that the Lord is leading you tonight. But there's also serving and going, and I don't want to diminish these, because as we've said multiple times, I really do believe that the Lord is calling at least somebody in this room into missions tonight, if not 4, 5, 6, I don't know, maybe the whole entire room of us. But the Lord is doing a new thing, and we all get to be a part of it. I had this one picture that I couldn't figure out where to put in my slides, and it's my family in Paraguay. There are a couple of families there that have kind of taken me under their wing and have helped me learn the culture and learn to love Paraguay. They are people who, even in my limited Spanish on hard days, would say, I understand. I know what you're going through. We're here for you. And all those kinds of things. And so this picture is from us sharing Thanksgiving with them for their first time, since Thanksgiving is not something that happens in Paraguay. But they have just blessed me in the way that they have ministered to me. in the way that they have invited me in the way that they have helped me learn from my mistakes that I have made. And they have just been such a huge blessing. And so I didn't want to miss the opportunity to recognize that there are people in all of these other countries that we talk about who are saying yes to the Lord as well. As I was praying about what to share this season, as I at first didn't really know what I would be doing, and I wasn't sure what area I would be in, this verse kept popping up in Ephesians 4. And it says, "Therefore, I, a prisoner for serving the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of your calling, for you have been called by God." And I, above everything else, want to encourage people to walk in the calling, to walk. We talked about worthy conduct earlier this week. Just to lead a life that the Lord desires for each of us because he loves us and cares for us. So Holly's going to come back up. We have a couple more thoughts, but they all tied together. So we wanted to share together a little bit as we close instead of just one or the other.
When I was first called to be a missionary and I was struggling with that call because I didn't have all the details, a very wise man and I sat down for the conversation and he told me, "Holly, we are all called to be disciples of Jesus Christ. If you are sitting in this room, and even if you're not sitting in this room, you are not exempt from this calling. If you are questioning, am I called or not? The answer is yes, you are called. You're called to be a disciple. If you are his, it should show in your life. You should be walking in his steps. You should be obedient. We are all called to be disciples of Jesus Christ." But he said, that's not the only layer of calling. He said, that's the first one. Number two is some more of us are actually called into full-time service. And the church needs those people. The church needs evangelists. The church needs holiness evangelists. The church needs song leaders. People who can minister to us in music. People who run the soundboard in the back. He needs people who can lead a Bible study or lead the children's ministry. He needs pastors. And this place is a place that has produced multiples of all of those. And we have been feeling, and I think some of the others have been feeling, that the Lord is actually calling some more tonight. And we are trusting him for that. I'm praying for a tithe, that Taylor County would give a tithe, either to missions full-time or to some kind of full-time ministry, whether that be additional people going into song evangelism, worship leaders for our churches, pastors for our churches, preachers for the holiness. I mean, we need some more David Gallimores. We need some more Dan Schaefers. We need some people back in the back working that sound booth. We need some more Miss Kylie's over in the Children's Tabernacle with the rest of those workers and those who are in the nursery. We need more of those people. So those are the first two. And within the number that are called a full-time ministry, there's some more that are called to cross-culture, to cross that language barrier. Not always, but a lot of times that means going to another country. Sometimes it's right here in the States. Sometimes it's across the street. But sometimes God calls some people into cross-cultural ministry. And then he told me, as I was looking at my calling, then number four is that specific country, a specific people group or ministry. And he told me, that very wise man told me, hold that one light. Because God can change that part. But if you are 100% his, Holly, you hold on to that. So my challenge for you all tonight is, have you answered his call? Whatever that looks like. And don't think I'm speaking to just the youth tonight. Sylvia Degenkolb and Ray Degenkolb are going back to the mission field. I think Uncle Doug and Miss Winnie thought that they were done with missions and stepped forward, just got dropped in their laps. If you're still on this planet, God's got something for you.
One of my favorite quotes about missions is that the mission field is the place between your two feet. And so the question and challenge that I have for you tonight is, where are your two feet and where is the Lord calling you today? We want to open up the altar and just have a few moments to sing, because as we've mentioned several times, we really feel like the Lord is leading in some way, and we don't want to miss the opportunity to respond to what he's been saying to us tonight. So the altar is open. We're going to sing a little bit. Feel free to move in whatever way that the Lord is leading.